Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Can I have your attention, please? It's approximately 9:10, and I think everything's organized. We have a ton of literature at the front table from Mike Marlin will be our guest speaker a little bit later on, and we have literature from the State Library and large print in Braille. There's some actually handwritten Braille, and then there's quite a bit in front of me. And after our meeting here, eventually those of you who don't are not able to pick the literature up here can eventually go to the registration desk. There'll probably be literature over. So I would like to go around the room and have everyone introduce themselves, and I want to thank you all for coming here and at great expense, I know, money-wise, sleep-wise. So let's begin with our treasurer, John Ross, to my right, and then I'll have...
Morning. John Ross, treasurer, and I'm from Bakersfield.
And before I go any further, I would like to introduce Gigi. She's our mic runner that I've designated for this meeting. And anyone who wishes to speak, hold up your hand when I recognize you, and she'll pass the mic to you. So, who's next?
I am Katrina McCurdy from San Leandro, California. I'm a member of the BRLC board number two. I think it's board number one, number two. I'm not sure. I forgot which one.
Number one.
Number one?
Yes.
I'm number one. Okay, that's it. Anyway, you'll hear more about me later.
Okay.
Thank you.
If you can go along and just tap someone else on the
Keith screen. Johnson, I'm the vice president of this here ragtag group. I'm from Pasadena,
ragtag
California.
Group. Nice description, Keith.
Yeah.
Okay.
It is ragtag this morning.
Right.
This is Judy Wilkinson, and I'm going to keep tabs of everybody in this room, and I want you all to come to the Kahlua meeting, which immediately follows this one. Whether you're a member or not, if you stay in the room, we'll know you're a friend. So look forward to seeing you all later in the morning, and I hope a lot of you are going to be at our luncheon as well.
This is Connie Bateman from Sacramento, and I'm a member of the Host Chapter, ACB Capital Chapter.
Hey, hey.
Thank you.
This is Tom Randall. I'm from the Greater San Joaquin Valley Chapter, CCB from Fresno.
Welcome.
Diane Phelps from Solano Chapter.
Yeah, this is Josie Conkley from the Capital Chapter. We're hosting the convention this year.
And I'm Mary Beth Randall from the Greater San Joaquin Valley Chapter.
Hello, everyone. It's Linda Porrell from the San Francisco Chapter, and I'm board... member number two, but I want to say that nobody tries harder than Katrina.
I'm Preston, president of Alameda County Chapter, and also a member of Bayview as well.
I'm Risa Gibson. I'm also a member of the Alameda County Chapter of the CCB. That's my home chapter, and I'm also a member of Bayview.
David Hoffman, member of the Silicon Valley Chapter.
Roger Peterson from Mountain View, California, and I'm on the board of the Braille Revival League National Group.
I am Mike Keithley. I'm the corresponding secretary of this of BRLC. I'm from Mountain View and president of the Silicon Valley Council.
Albert Contreras from Temple City, and I am president of the Orientation Center Alumni Chapter, and I hope to maybe see some of you at our luncheon tomorrow.
I'm Pam Pology from Temple City, and I am the treasurer of the San Gabriel Valley Chapter. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Mike Marlin, director of the California Braille and Talking Book Library here in Sacramento, the regional library for Northern California of the National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped.
All right.
And I feel like you're my personal librarian.
I feel like all of you are my personal patrons.
Lots of good books, let me tell you.
Beryl Brown, Redwood Empire Chapter Treasurer.
Larry Hall, President of the Redwood Empire Chapter, but also member of the San Francisco Chapter.
Beryl, too. I am Gigi DeMarie, and I'm a member of the Redwood Empire Chapter, and also a member of the San Francisco Chapter, and I serve as Vice President for the Redwood Chapter. Good morning, everybody.
Hi, I'm Valerie Reese-Lerman, and I'm a reader advisor at the Braille and Talking Book Library. And I'm going to help Mike co-present today if anybody has any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. And I want to thank again Gigi, who was pressed into service with no orientation to what she is having to do. So, again, thank you, Gigi. And Marlene O'Neill regrets that she can't be here. Her husband is scheduled for surgery, and so what I will do is have her read the minutes for the last meeting and this meeting as well at the fall convention. And I'll turn next to the John Ross, our treasurer, who will be... Pardon me? Collecting later on for those who wish to donate to the Braille Challenge. And so with no further ado, here's John Ross.
Okay, our treasurer's report, beginning balance was $3,209.83. Total expenditures were $595. Income total was $1,062. Ending balance is $3,676.83. Thank you.
Okay, are there any questions? Correct. Yes.
Okay. Thank you. The date of the beginning balance is January 1st of 11, and the end balance as of was March 20th. Thanks.
March 20th being the ending date of the ending balance.
When I heard it for the conference.
For the what?
That was when we had our conference. Oh, okay. Thank you.
Okay, as you've probably noted from the program, we have a similar arrangement like we had in the fall, where the BRLC meeting, business meeting, speakers meeting, and the Kahlua meeting and Kahlua BRLC luncheon will be in this room, so that makes it really convenient for all of us, and especially if you have your tickets for the luncheon. And with regard to fundraising, we will be planning a fundraiser in the fall at our March 20th conference call. It was agreed that that would be perhaps the best way to fundraise, since the spring convention was less than a couple of months away. Did you have any thing to add, John, regarding to fundraising? Okay.
Well, on our conference call, we had talked, and Katrina had said she was, I believe she's willing to make fudge. So that's always a good one. Thank you.
Okay, well, what I would like to do here, since we're all recording, is when you wish to speak, hold up your hand and Gigi can pass you the mic. Are there any other items on the agenda that anyone wishes to cover? Yes, Roger.
Are we going to send a delegate to BRL?
Yes.
I would hope that since it's so close, some of you guys might go, you know. I'm willing to be the delegate, but I don't need to be. I'm already on the board
right.
of BRL.
Well, I'm glad you reminded me. We voted to have Marlene O'Neill be the delegate for the to the national convention
for this coming
July in Reno, and she will be at that convention. So. We have a proposed amount of $400 that we would like to send as the delegate expense. So is there a motion to do that?
I so move.
Okay. It's been moved. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, and Albert seconds. Keith moves and Albert seconds. Any discussion? Okay, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay, that's what we'll do. Are there any committee reports that we need to... we've just done fundraising... anything about upcoming elections or not until next spring? Okay. So you were saying something about the nominating committee?
We don't need to have a nominating committee until fall, I guess.
Okay.
Next spring.
Nominations are open for the nominating committee?
Or in the fall. That's what I'm asking you.
For the fall convention?
If the elections aren't until next spring,
right.
Do we need to have a nominating committee now or in the fall? I think in the fall. Maybe.
I think in the fall. Okay.
So we should prepare to do that in the fall and then have the nominating committee report before the spring convention.
Right.
When the elections will be, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So would we be able to do that in the fall? Would that give us enough time to have a report?
Yes.
Okay. Right. I'd like to, if there's, it's like 9:30 or so, is there any for business to come before the business meeting? Would you like, why don't you, John Ross is going to go around and collect for the Braille Challenge. Yes, Linda.
Will you be collecting for dues as well, John, or do you want to do a double sweep? How do you, what would be easiest for you?
Let me collect for the challenge first.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay.
I have a question.
Oh yes, Preston, you hold up your hand.
Could you please explain the Braille Challenge, what it is and what it's about?
The Braille Challenge is an event that takes place once a year. This past year was in San Francisco, and we pay for transportation for young blind adults to the inner contests, and they have different things that they're learning Braille and they entered a different contest. Maybe someone who's familiar could also explain what the challenge. Okay, who wants to? Okay.
Okay.
And
the way the Braille Challenge works is that students of all ages from, elementary level through college enter the Braille Challenge.
Through high school.
Through high school.
Through college. Yeah. And anyhow, that's why I say elementary. And because I actually...
Get on the mic, Keith.
Yeah. Anyhow, so what they do, they do... each student applies, and what they do is they do various things like reading, they do spell corrections, they do transcribing, they do dictation, and things like that. And then as each candidate progresses in the challenge, the areas become more difficult to work with, and then the ones who come out on top get various prizes, such as scholarships, I guess, and I forgot some of the other prizes they get. But it started out through Braille Institute in Los Angeles many years ago, and it's spread across the country. They have contests up in the Bay Area, well, all over the country, and the winners go to, they've been going to Los Angeles to Braille Institute for that, for the finals. And where did they go last year? San Francisco or something like that?
Yes, San Francisco, the Lighthouse.
No?
Not the Lighthouse.
No, that's not right.
That's a regional.
Yeah. And so, okay, the finals are at Braille Institute. And so, and usually that ends, was it in late June or something like that? I don't remember the exact dates. But that's the way that usually works. And it forms subject areas in reading and writing communications in Braille. So that's basically what the bridge is.
For students generally.
Yes.
Yes.
We have another comment.
Also, does You wanted to add something, Judy?
Yeah, there's a couple of things. First, I'll look it up. There was an article by Susan Schulter in the BC about 2 years ago. Wonderful article. Yeah. And if I can find it before the meeting is over, I'll let you know which issue. Could anyone give us a report on how the regional went? Linda, are you able to do that? I mean, because we'd love to. Yeah.
Yes, that would be excellent if you would.
Hi, everyone. My name is Alice McGrath, and I work at Vista Center for the Blind. And the history has been the three agencies, Lighthouse for the Blind, Vista Center, and Society for the Blind in Sacramento, have chaired this event. And so the event at the Lighthouse went extremely well. We had, we had 22 youth registered. We had 17 show, because I don't know if you remember, it was a bizarre weekend with weather happening in various different places, and so some folks were actually snowed in. The event itself went beautifully, and also the event when it, so for the youth, we had great proctors, we had great scorers, we're always looking for more. And the actual events that were held for the teachers and the parents were well received. And so next year it will be hosted by Vista Center, and so it will be doing the same thing, coordinating the event. And we're always continuing to look for promotion within the community. Some of the we had the majority of the youth that participated this year were in the younger age group, so that's really helpful. That just means that they're now going to be coming back into the challenge, because many of the kids have kind of grown out of it. They're now in college and beyond. So that's just a quick little update for you.
Well, thank you, Alice. Is there any more? Yes, Roger.
I want to thank Alice for doing that. What she's talking about, of course, is the Northern California regional one, and that happened in, was it March, Alice?
Or
end of February 27th or something like that. And so the people who did well in that one are, I guess, are scheduled to go to L.A. and be in the big one at the Braille Institute in probably June, I think. And I believe that the money that we collect here, we've been providing to the national group, to the Braille Institute, for helping to pay expense. Apparently, the Braille Challenge pays everything except the transportation for the student and the family. And some of them are ill-equipped financially to get to L.A. So a few years ago, we decided to contribute some money each year to that somebody at Braille Institute would provide to some family that they knew wouldn't be able to come otherwise. But so it's a Braille competition. The idea is to, you know, to do the rah-rah thing for Braille like we do for sports and other things. And it's a good cause, I think.
Last year, I think there was a 10-year-old student from Zachary from Montana. So students come from all over. And the Braille Challenge is, as Roger said, to pay for the transportation of those students so they can participate in the competition. Okay. Is there any other business to come before this meeting? It's about 9:40. And I would like to introduce Mike Marlin, who's going to explain the literature that we have at the front table here. There's quite a lot, and we're really pleased and privileged to have him as a guest from the Braille and Talking Book Library. And so, Gigi, if you can get...
I've got the microphone
right, okay.
Now. This, do you just want me to
mention what's up on the table for now?
Yes. That's,
okay, very good. I brought three Braille handouts. The first, in very short supply, is our brochure, which we usually have in large print. In fact, we do have some here, which we're going to try to put out at the registration table or somewhere out there. And I have about 11 copies because the Braille embosser, we ran out of paper last night and in the middle of that job. And I was at 7 o'clock at the library. No one else was there to ask if we had any spare paper, which I don't think we do. So that's first on the ordering agenda. The second handout is available. The title is Available Hand-Copied Braille at the Braille and Talking Book Library. There are currently 19 out of 28, which means the other, nine have gone missing, unfortunately. But these are beyond NLS Braille that either has been donated to the library or somebody from, well, I actually don't know the origin of most of it, but it wound up, and so we have some of that. So it's just accession number and title and author, and it didn't have room for annotations, but you can look it all up in our catalog. And then finally, I have a book called BTBL Statistics, and it has all kinds of fun statistics about readership, circulation, barred downloads, that sort of thing, just for any of you number geeks out there who are interested. So that's what I've got up at the front table. And we also have generic business cards that have the library's phone number, email, etc., address, and in large print and Braille on the cards as well. So there you go.
Okay. I'd like to thank Alice McGrath for giving an excellent description of the Braille Challenge, what it is, and what we raise money to pay for. And those of you who wish to get your, I think we'll break unless there's anything that someone else wants to bring up for the business meeting. Is there any further business to come before this meeting? Yes, we'll have a short break, and then Mike will speak to us. Yes, Mike will speak to us concerning BTBL, and especially with regard to Braille and how our newcomers introduced to Braille. So we'll break now. Yes. Yes, Linda.
I move that the meeting be adjourned.
Okay.
Just put a bow on it.
Is there a second? Okay, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? This business meeting is adjourned until the fall. And again, thank you all for coming. Okay, we're going to begin the speaker's part of this meeting. And, yes, Roger.
Judy had to leave for a moment. She asked me to announce to you that it was the summer 2009 issue of the Blind Californian that had the article about the Braille Challenge by Susan Schulter, which won a publication award last year, by the way. And she said that if you can't find it online or something, if you're interested, write to her. I think you can write to her at editor@ccbnet.org, and she'll see that you get a copy by email or whatever you need.
I'll announce that at the luncheon also.
She'll probably be here then. She can announce herself.
Right. Okay, I would like to introduce our guest speaker, Mike Marlin from BTBL. And the topic is going to be emphasis on Braille and how our new people being introduced to Braille through BTBL and also how best to get a hold of them. So here is Mike Marlin. Let's all give him a warm welcome.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks, everybody, for inviting me. If you heard before, Valerie Reese Lerman, who's a reader advisor at the library, is here as well. And although she's not formally speaking, she's certainly welcome from me to pipe in with correct me on anything or answer questions when we open it up to general questions. So I am going to talk a little bit about Braille outreach and that sort of thing, but I kind of wanted to sort of go over Braille within the library, some statistics, and how we're set up for Braille and what happens when volumes go missing, and fun in the intra workings of a library that you may not have thought about before and may not even want to know, but I'm going to tell you anyway. First, let me say that I am legally blind. I'm a Braille reader. I learned Braille late in life at age, let me do the math here, 39 or something like that. It's never too late. I agree. I'm a slow Braille reader. I'm sure that more practice would increase that. However, when I was in my early 20s, I was working in the college campus coffee shop, and I accidentally sliced off the very fraction of the tip of my right index finger. So I have a hard time. I'm pretty much a left-fingered Braille reader with the occasional forays with the right hand, which is interesting. Perhaps I'll write a book about it someday. Anyway, so I definitely am an advocate and proponent for Braille reading. This is an interesting time now, considering that Braille readership is down so drastically nationally and locally, and not as much worldwide, oddly enough. The problem, of course, around the rest of the world is simply resources. And so the European countries are doing pretty well, but when it comes to some of the other parts of the world, they're always grateful for getting any excess Braille from the National Library Service and from our library. We have a frequent requester from Indonesia who's always asking for our discarded Braille. So, as you know, I think that the national percentage of Braille readership is among people who could benefit from reading Braille is something 10% nationally. Someone can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think I'm too far off. I know that the National Library Service network, there are about 850,000 patrons it fluctuates between 800 to 1 million. Right now it's just under 800,000. There are about 85,000 Braille readers in the network, so that's about 10%. In our regional library, and we really cover 48 counties, because although we have two sub-regional libraries, and I'm sure many of you belong to them, one in San Francisco and one in Fresno, we are the Braille library, and we distribute Braille to patrons of those two libraries and regionally in 48 counties here in Northern California. So out of 12,000 registered individual patrons and 552 institutions, we have approximately 835 individual Braille readers and 87 institutions. So nationally, that's, what, about 1%? No, yeah, it is 1%. So it would be great if California could step it up and recruit and teach more kids Braille. Obviously, there's politics, philosophy, resources, budget issues. There are all kinds of parameters that influence the advocacy and the advent of new technologies and all that stuff. And I'll go into that in a little bit. I'm sure that this group, you've probably discussed that philosophy divide amongst teaching kids Braille versus teaching them audio interaction with texts, which is really not the same as the literacy that comes from being a Braille reader. And I that's not a judgmental statement. I think that's fairly factual based on all the stuff I've read and heard other people speak about. So, that said, we, and I here somewhere I have my statistics. I also have these all these statistics out here on a handout in Braille for anyone who would like to come up to the table and get one, as well as hand-copied Braille and the BTBL brochure, which has our contact information. So as I said, we have a couple quick statistics. In April, we circulated 538 Braille items. I don't have the numbers on, I think out of the 835 people, I think maybe about half of them borrowed Braille in April. You know, not every, you know, borrowing Braille, obviously some people read a Braille book in a week. Some people read them in a month. The average is a couple months, two to three months. So we are fairly liberal, wouldn't you say, Valerie, in terms of people meeting the 5-week loan period for Braille? Because we understand. And really, our loan period is because we want to get the book back when somebody else wants it, not because we're trying to be mean or anything like that. Contrary to maybe some popular belief. So we circulated about 538 or so books this past month. For the last 12 months, I went back and looked, it's about 6,600 Braille books circulated over the past year. And that works out to about 7 Braille books per reader per year, which that's just an average. I think that there's probably people in this room who read many more books than that per year. That would be my guess. And if you compare that, of course, to the audio collections, the digital books and the downloadable digital audio books and cassette books, of which we still distribute, it's a pretty small fraction. But that's another aspect of the library we don't need to go into right now. And then, of course, there is web Braille. And are most people here familiar with web Braille? Okay, back in the, I would say, 95, 96, when software for transcription for Braille, such as Duxbury, and I forget there's another big vendor, I can't remember their name right now. But when they were coming into being, the National Library Service and Judy Dixon, who's their Braille person, who's a great person if you ever get a chance to hear her speak, she was very forcefully advocated for getting as much Braille electronically available as possible because refreshable Braille displays were just coming on the market in the mid to late 90s. And they have come a long way, obviously. I've got a little Braille note here, and thanks to Voc Rehab. And so I'm able to read 40 characters of Braille, and, you know, there are 80-character displays for people, for full keyboards that people use. There's, you know, 16-character, 22 characters. If you're a Braille reader, though, it's a great option to be able to download an electronic Braille file, and then the pins on your refreshable Braille display pop up, and you can read a line at a time, and read a book, or read anything that's available in Braille. Magazines, too, that's right. And so the National Library Service decided that this was the way to go. They were able to electronically capture Braille going all the way back to the early 90s, so that right now what's available on the web Braille site is everything, every Braille book and magazine that's been Brailled since 1991 or 1992. So almost 20 years worth, which isn't bad. You know, that's, if you figure the National Library Service produces 600 to 700 titles a year, you know, that's, what is that, 12,000 items or something like that? That's not bad. The rest of the Braille, of course, is out there. There are many regional libraries who serve as pocket book libraries. We're one of them. Not every library does anymore. I don't know if you folks were aware. Many libraries, due to financial considerations, have given up their Braille collections and then contracted. For example, out west here, Utah provides Braille service for Colorado, Arizona, New Mexico, Wyoming. Valerie, do you remember any others? I There are several. Massachusetts does, Rhode Island does, all the New England states, and have for a long time. They're even doing, I think, Georgia now, and they're doing some states in the South. So, you know, it always comes down to resource issue. Luckily, we are able to continue to shelve Braille. We have a 12,000 square foot basement, half of which is taken up by Braille, except for right now it's out in West Sacramento because of a merger owing to the refurbishing of one of the library buildings. But within a couple of years, we think by spring of 2013, all the Braille will be back in the library and we'll have a browsing collection again for folks to come in. And it will gain half a day on Braille distribution. Let's see. So I mentioned Web Braille. If you're interested in Web Braille and you have a device that can read electronic Braille, I encourage you to contact us and we'll get you set up. It's a separate system now. And one thing that I wanted to try to gather statistics for, but unfortunately, the National Library Service, because they set it up long before the internet became a real commodity, there are no statistics for Web Braille, other than I can tell you there's 240 people signed up for it. But I couldn't tell you how often they download items or how many items get downloaded. That will be coming because, for those of you who are familiar with Bard, the Braille and audio reading download site, it's actually now really just ARD, not Bard. But it will, because Braille has not been integrated into it yet. However, this is a top priority. It's for the database and web programmer, Michael Mardies at NLS. This is his next top priority because, as you know, a couple years ago, the Bard was piloted. It went live in mid-2008. We now have 1,626 Bard users, which is fantastic. That's about the... out of our 12,000 people, that's 8% or something. The national average for Bard usage is about 10%. So that's not bad. And so they were waiting to get all the regional libraries signed up to administer their own local Bard programs. They've done that now. Bard is also now available to institutions. I'll talk about that at the next meeting. And the electronic Braille or web Braille will be incorporated into Bard. And so we've had several patrons ask us, well, am I going to have, you know, I have a password for your OPAC, which stands for Online Public Access Catalog, where you can order books, physical books like digital books, Braille books, set books, have them sent to you. So that's one set of passwords. Then we have Bard, which is another set. And then we have web Braille, which is another set. And wouldn't it be nice to have one username and one password? Well, this is something that patron advisory groups and we librarians have been telling NLS for a while. Part of it, the equation will be solved when they roll over Web Braille into Bard, because our guess, and we could be off, but hopefully we're not, is that most Bard users are already Web Braille users. Or I should say most of the Web Braille users of the 240 folks are signed up for Bard. And if they're not, then once Braille goes over to Bard, they can just sign up and then they'll be able to use, you know, they won't have to worry about their Web Braille password anymore.
I didn't know you mentioned with regard to the password, you mentioned for...
OPAC, Online Public Access Catalog.
Okay.
That is available if you go to the BTBL website at btbl.cagov/clasweb, KLASWEB, or you can just go to btbl.ca.gov and see the link to search the online catalog. CLAS stands for the Keystone Library Automation System. That is our database vendor where we keep all of our information, including patron account information, catalog records, equipment management records, generating reports and statistics, or as one of my library professors used to refer to them, sadistics. But that's one of the older jokes in the book, so. Sure. For the BTBL website, it's BTBL, or Braille and Talking Book Library, btbl.ca.gov. So, BTBL, California, gov. pretty easy to remember. And I slash KLASWEB, Kloss Web. And that gets you in. And you do need to have a username and password, which we're in the process of negotiating with our IT department to be able to email people passwords. They were worried about secure stuff, and we've been trying to tell them that, no, this is an honest group of people. You can trust them. No, I didn't really say that, but I feel that way. Valerie, did you have something to add?
I just wanted to add that if anybody needs to register, if anybody needs to register with WebRail or find out their user ID and password, just come up and see me at the end of the meeting, and I'll get your name and number, and we'll get back to you. We're on the left side of the room up front here. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. Let me see. What else? Oh, so I did want to talk about one thing that Judy had asked me to talk about, which is kind of a fun, interesting diversion, is how do you handle a Braille book that's 30 volumes long? For example, The Joy of Cooking, which when I looked at it, when I'm the one who does the copy allotment, I look at what's coming out, I say we need X copies of this. And most Braille items we only order one copy of because of the, you know, it's takes up shelf space, and you know, even though we have 12,000 square feet, we still really would only do it for something excruciatingly popular. Even a bestseller doesn't necessarily warrant the need for a second copy. If we had room, I'd do it in a heartbeat, but unfortunately we don't. So I'm looking and I'm seeing, and I know that we've had, the Bible is, I don't know, do you remember that?
35
or 36 volumes. Right, and Joy of Cooking is 30, and I ordered two copies of The Joy of Cooking because I thought it said three volumes. I was reading really fast. And I had forgotten the huge book that my mom had that, you know, I could hardly hold up as a kid. And so we've got, one of them is cataloged, the other one we're waiting on, because, you know, in the event that we lose one of the volumes from the first set, but we're hoping we don't. The way that we handle this for large books like that is we just give the patron a call and say, you got 30 volumes of Braille on the way. Just so you know what you're getting into, you know, make sure you count them, make sure you have them all. Give the postal carrier a break. You know, hopefully they won't get a hernia bringing them all to you. But as they probably did back in the days of LPs when somebody would carry Dante's Inferno to, you know, rural Idaho or something. But anyway, that's another era. So that's how we handle that. There's not too much to say about that. The sort of subtopic that comes out of that is what happens if we lose a volume from a set, whether it's a three-volume set or a two-volume or greater set. Well, this has happened. Sometimes people, not purposefully, will misplace a book, whether if they're moving, if for whatever reason. You know, for most of our books, for cassette books and digital books, it's not a big problem because we can duplicate them pretty easily. Well, you can't duplicate a Braille volume. And what happens is, you know, we made this decision before I got there, that if a Braille set is not complete, we mark it unavailable. And then what we do is we go out and either if a person requests that book, we have it interlibrary loaned from our multi-state center, where there's two multi-state centers within the National Library Service. One of them is in Utah. It serves the western states, Midwestern and Western. And they can do that. They can send you a Braille copy. And then when you read it, you actually send it directly back to them. It doesn't come through our hands. The other thing that we do is we post to the rest of the network that we need this particular Braille volume or Braille book. And there's a list that goes out every month to all the libraries around the country. You know, this is the Braille excess list. This is what somebody needs, if you can help them. Well, we haven't had a whole lot of luck with this because I think like us, many of the other libraries have missing volumes from different sets over the years. And I spoke to someone at NLS this week because I wanted to know, well, what happens if, what do you consider a master copy of Braille? Do you have one that doesn't ever circulate? And if so, what good is that? And, if let's, in worst case scenario, Harry Potter Vol. 7 disappeared from all the shelves of all the Braille libraries in the country, what would we do? Well, luckily, actually, that's not a good example because there's electronic masters of that. Let's go back a little ways. Let's go back to John Steinbeck, Grapes of Wrath, for example. Although that's not a good example either because that's been retroactively digitized. Just think of some book like that. It goes missing. What do you do? So the Multistate Center, even though they are the repository for one copy of everything that NLS has ever produced since 1931, they will loan it to you. And the NLS's philosophy is, you know, they're not like many traditional libraries that have an archive, that have reference-only copies. Their philosophy is that all may read. And so get it out into the hands of people. And I was told, yeah, we would send it out to whoever requested it. And if they lost it, well, it's not the end of the world because their solution would be to re-record an audiobook or re-braille that particular item. And it would take a little bit of time, but, you know, it would be accomplished. So I was really relieved to hear that. And the one other fun thing that I saw last time I was at NLS in D.C. and I toured their building, they purchased, not that long ago, it was either from Moscow or, what's the other big city? Petersburg. A Braille scanner. I think it cost them a lot of money, a lot of dough, like, you know, $100,000 or something. But it actually scans Braille and digitizes it. I felt the outside of the machine. It's just like a big, huge, it's kind of like a Braille press, but not that logically constructed. But if you've seen electronic scanners, you know, just sort of increase the size by exponentially by 10 or something, and you've got the brainer. So they are able to do that, and it's only resource scarcity that has kept them from electronically brailing the entire collection. But I have a feeling, I can't say it's their top priority, but it is something I know that they've talked about doing little by little. And the one statistic I didn't mention earlier was just the number of Braille. There's something like 57,000 volumes of 18,000 plus titles available in the NLS collection. That's since 1931. There are many other libraries like us who have some locally produced hand-copied Braille. I know that Boston, the Perkins Library in Massachusetts, had the Boston Public Library's collection donated to them, and Boston Public Library was the first Braille library in the United States in 1898. California's was established here in the state library, in the state capitol. Ours was established in 1904, so not too shabby. And there were several others that came in being. We were part of the original collection of libraries that helped found NLS in 1931. So we were part of that original network. So that's kind of an exciting statistic. Iowa, yes, Iowa does too. Iowa has a very good Braille collection. Most of the states where there is a commission on the blind are very active Braille states. And there are, you know, Missouri's pretty active, Massachusetts, Iowa, I'm trying to think where else. No, not New York, no. I didn't look this up. I can get back to people if that's a question you'd like answered. But and California, unfortunately, does not have a commission for the blind. I know I've heard a little bit from Dan Kaiser and from who's the other person I'm thinking of? governmental affairs person, Frank. Frank Welty. And they kind of told me a little bit about the travails of trying to set up a commission, which I think was just not a great fiscal time, as if there has been one in this state for, since when? Somebody want to shout out a year? I have no idea. It's been a while. Anyhow, trying to think, I tend to ramble a little bit. I have an 8-track mind. If you remember those 8-track cassettes, that's how I work sometimes when I get nervous in front of a crowd. Why don't I open it up for questions now, and then if I think of anything else in my notes here that I didn't cover, I'll come back. Oh, then let's open it up for questions.
What about children specifically? Do you keep track of children's statistics and their reading of Braille? That's really important to me personally.
Thank you so much for asking that. You know, I haven't looked lately. I meant to do that this week. This is a crazy week, unfortunately. That was one of those that kept popping in front of me, and then I forgot to look it up. So I'll get back to the group with that statistic. But I can say that our juvenile readership is very low. I want to say it's... Well, I mean, we have 200 or so juveniles signed up total for the entire program. And young adult readers, the way our system works, where it's really difficult for us to separate young adult from adult readers. But we do have a very... I mean, NLS... does a really amazing job at producing Braille and for children. Let me just finish real quick with one other thought. And that is that one of the things that we desperately need is a children's librarian at BTBL. And when we talk about advocacy at some point, we can mention that. But the staffing at BTBL is basically skeletal right now. So I'd say that the number's probably in the hundreds for kids who are signed up for Braille. And the circulation, which is another thing I will check, out of those 550 to 700 volumes go out every month, I would say less than 100 are juvenile books. So that's something for us to work on. I mean, I was supposed to start off by talking about how we introduce new Braille readers, and that was the other thing I was going to say real quick, is that, you know, we have basically, there's two of us to do outreach. Mary Jane Kays, who's our outreach librarian, some of you may know, does a fantastic job, but she has to cover 48 counties over the course of a year, and the governor just banned all out-of-state and local travel. So we don't even know if we're going to be able to use the state library's car, let alone get reimbursed for mileage. So anyway, that's a digression. But we, you know, when we do go out and talk to groups, we always talk about Braille literacy. We always talk about the importance of educating and teaching kids Braille. You know, we do what we can do. We could probably do more in our newsletter and as of our website. But what we really need is the community's help. And I'm going to talk more at lunchtime about the Patron Advisory Council, which I'm working on establishing. Sorry to take up so much time on that question, but whoever's next.
Okay, I've got a question. This is Josie Conklin. What do you do with books that are donated, the Braille material? In other words, later I'd like to donate some good books. Do I do it to our local library or what?
Yeah, we always will welcome donations. One of our problems right now is that I'm the only Braille reader on the staff. We had a volunteer who was very active and has since left us. So we could really use a Braille emergency, emergent Braille or whatever, a Braille connoisseur. We could really use a volunteer at the library. But yes, if you have donations, just give me a call, and I'll work on getting it. It may take a little while to get cataloged and into the collection, but we'll do it.
Hi, this is Roger Peterson, and a couple of things. One, you were talking about the old LP talking books, and I wanted to tell you that a friend of mine one time said he let his talking books accumulate for a while and decided he ought to send them back, so he put him in the neighbor kid's red wagon and took it down the street to the mailbox and started feeding him into the mailbox, and the mailbox tipped over. But the thing I really wanted to mention was, and I hope that with children's stuff, You're in cahoots with Stuart Wittenstein, who's a great advocate of Braille.
Yes, yes, Stuart is a very good ally of
but
the library.
I wanted to mention that we're in CCB, we're actually looking into getting a Braille scanner. We don't think you need to have that big one that you're talking about. We think that there's software and you can use a regular scanner in some kind of way, and we're looking into that because we've got some stuff for our history that's only available. We only have Braille copies of it, and so we really would like to scan some of that stuff in. And that's technology that we want to try to follow and keep track of. Thank you.
Well, who was that? Eugene? No, Roger, please contact me. I'd love to be involved and learn about that. Incidentally, what they got the scanner for primarily was the Braille scores collection. And just so everyone knows, all the Braille scores and, well, not all of them, but a good portion of them are going to be part of BARD. So Braille music instruction and Braille notation for musicians. That's all going on to BARD. Anyone else? Any other questions? Anything else, Steve? Okay, well, I tell you what. Thank you all so much for indulging me in my 8-track mind, and hopefully the talk was linear enough that you got something out of it. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mike. Let's give him another round of applause. That was really an excellent presentation. And I want to thank all of you for coming, and hope that you stay here because Judy Wilkinson has a very stimulating, exciting program that I'm ready to be here. I haven't been to the last few Kahlua meetings, but I'm certainly going to be attending from now on, so stay tuned for an exciting program, and I know Judy will have an excellent presentation. So thank you again, and we'll meet again in October.
Thank you, Steve. Okay.